This is the Public Radio Hour on 89.3 Huntsville, our weekly mix of special programs and homemade radio features. In the next hour, we'll explore the power of the spirit and mind as we learn about the November 15th visit of a prominent Indian Buddhist monk, the Venerable Bhikkhu Sanghasanan, at Oakwood University, and a Saturday night performance by renowned vocal group Voces 8. Find more info about those events on the WLRH.org community calendar. We're also honoring Heroes Week in Huntsville as we prepare for Veterans Day and the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I this Sunday, November 11th. We'll hear from Steve Mosian with the Semper Fi Community Task Force. But let's start by picking up where we left off last week as we were talking about The Wall That Heals, a three-quarter replica of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. It was on display at John Hunt Park in Huntsville. Thousands visited the wall to pay homage and remember those who served in the Vietnam War. Some used paper and chalk to make etchings of names important to them. Community newsroom producer Kathy Main and our public microphone were there to give visitors a chance to share their thoughts.
My name is Ed Kennedy. I'm a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel. I served in the infantry for 22 years. And I enlisted at the end of Vietnam, but I did not go to Vietnam. My dad signed me up when I was 17. I think many people get different experiences from it, but I have a very good friend here who lost her husband, was an infantry officer, and it's a very emotional event because not only was the husband lost, friends of the family were lost. And so it makes us an emotional impact on them, brings back memories.
My name is Rebecca Marino. I serve with the First Patriot Support Corps, and we are an all-volunteer group. What we do is we educate the public. We assist veterans with PTSD, with moral injury as well, which is one of the newer ones that they just discovered, and with survivor's guilt as well. And what we do is, especially nowadays with the everything, all the equipment outside of a war zone, no one's trying to shoot at them. They can actually look at the stuff, and they're starting to swap stories on how they were working on their equipment, and some of the guys would say, oh, we never got this to work, so what we'd do is we'd jump up the wires this way, and we'd pull on this wire whenever we needed to, because they never had that. They didn't have, some of them were out in the jungle, and they just didn't have the resources to be able to get some of their equipment worked on. And so what's great with this event is that you can look around and you'll see groups of them talking and they're swapping stories, which helps them with their PTSD. Not only that, but they're able to talk for the first time with other veterans and swap stories. And just to be able to talk to someone else that was there, to even find buddies that are struggling with the same thing they're struggling with. And I don't know what it is about talking about it, but we have noticed that bottling it up is one of the worst things for the veterans to do, that actually coming out and not just talking about it, but finding other groups to identify with. It just helps them with their PTSD.
Hey, my name is Roger Grider. I serve. I was with the 82nd Airborne Division for 6 years. My dad served in the Army. My father-in-law served in the Army. We actually, my family has served since the Revolutionary War. My seventh great-grandfather is on the wall at the Veterans Memorial. He was the first veteran of Madison County. He moved here in 1804. I currently have a son that's serving right now and a daughter-in-law that's serving. My daughter-in-law is in a Wounded Warrior unit in Fort Carson. My son has a unit he's preparing to deploy in Fort Irwin, California. You know, this is a very intimate opportunity for people to come and visit the wall. If they go to Washington, it's almost sensory overload there. There's so much going on. When they come here, they have opportunity to intimately get there and be able to see and touch and feel and experience and rehash some old memories or put to bed some old memories that they have of the war and of friends that they've lost. This opportunity, you have not only do you get to see and feel and touch the wall, but with technology now, you can actually go back and see that individual that you're looking for. They have a database now of all the pictures of people that have served, or almost all. So they're trying to get a database of all of them, so you can see that guy on his best day, not his worst day. And many of the veterans remember that guy on the worst day they had.
My name is Robert Ney. I've been asked to provide a worship service here at the Wall. Really appreciate the Traveling Wall exhibit. I believe that it brings healing to the men and women who served our country during the Vietnam War. And it provides a sense of purpose and meaning to the ultimate sacrifice that the men and women have done for the cause of liberty and freedom here in the United States. And this traveling wall unites everyone through a common purpose, united in liberty and justice for all.
My name is Mark Spencer, and I was placed in charge of the media and communications team under the communications director, Arlen Busk. Yes, I am a veteran. I served 27 years in the Army and retired as a lieutenant colonel. It's meant far more to me than I ever could have imagined when I started. I've had an opportunity to interact with a large number of the people who are visiting here. And what's been surprising to me is the reasons that people have come to visit the wall. A significant number of those have been people that came to see the wall because they served in the military and served with soldiers or service members whose names are on the wall. But a greater number overall came to see the names of high school friends, other family members, or people that they knew, even though the visitor to the wall had never served in the military.
My name is Marshall Eubanks. I'm retired from the United States Army. I retired as a colonel in 1996. I flew helicopters in Vietnam 1971-72, and I flew in the Mekong Delta area of South Vietnam, and I flew what they call SLICS, UH-1H, troop transport helicopters. In about 2010, a few of us helicopter pilots here in Huntsville got together and decided we wanted to form a chapter of the Vietnam Helicopter Pilot Association. And we formed back then in 2010 the North Alabama chapter of the Vietnam Helicopter Pilot Association. To date, we have some 75 to 80 members. All these people flew a variety of helicopters in Vietnam. As I mentioned, I flew the UH-1H what's called a SLIC transport helicopter. We have people who flew the Cobra, we have people that flew the Chinook, people who flew the Scout helicopter in Vietnam. All our people flew between 1964 and 1972. We have people in the organization who was there when the war ended for the U.S. in March of 1973 and continued to fly some missions right after that. In 2011, we got our hands on a UH-1 Charlie model Huey gunship that flew in Vietnam from 68 to 1970, and it flew some 1,500 hours in country, and it was shot up two or three times. The helicopter was sitting at the U.S. Veterans Memorial Museum off Airport Road in Huntsville, and the owner of the museum, Randy Withrow, loaned us a helicopter on a semi-permanent basis, if you will, for us to restore it, maintain it, and display it. So it took us about 3 years working on Saturdays with all these members of our organization. We scrounged parts, we had people help us, we had sheet metal workers from a local contractor provide sheet metal work, we had a company paint the thing for us, but we did the bulk of the work. And the helicopter that you saw sitting outside was the labor of love of our work over about 3 years. So we now maintain it. We take it around to veterans events. We pull it in the Huntsville Veterans Day Parade every year. We take it to some schools and let school kids go through it who are hopefully studying something about Vietnam. We have it out here at the 50th anniversary celebration. So we do quite a bit with this helicopter every year. And we get a lot of veterans that come and just stand and stare at the helicopter, thinking back to when they flew on it or flew it in Vietnam and some of their experiences with that thing. As I said, all of our members flew helicopters in Vietnam. Most of them, almost all of them, know someone on that wall. Myself, my father is on the wall. He died in Vietnam in 1967 when I was 18-year-old freshman in college, so I have a very personal connection to that wall. Most of our members have been working over at the wall this week. We've been serving as ambassadors. We've been serving as transportation drivers for the people that need transportation help. We've been serving as education people in the education trailer, and we've been serving in the operations tent, helping run the operations of the thing.
So it really is a labor of love.
Yes, it's a labor of love, bringing that helicopter here, displaying the helicopter, letting not only the kids get in there and see what real 1950s technology is like, because none of them have ever seen anything like 1950s technology. And it's been a labor of love supporting Huntsville and bringing this wall to town.
My name is Sandy Stringham. I'm here to honor those that were fallen, friends of ours that we lost in the war. One, I saw his death advertised on the CBS News one night. They did a documentary called Same Mud, Same Blood. They were with Captain Tony Mavroudis, whose name is here on the wall. And at the end of the interview, at the end of the program, it said, "We regret to inform you that Captain Mavroudis was killed in action after this was posted." So my husband and I are here to honor them and to thank them for their service. And I think this is just an excellent idea, and I'm so impressed with the turnout, because history gets forgotten, and there's so many young people that aren't even aware of the Vietnam War. Even their parents may not be aware of the Vietnam War. And you can't go forward without the past, and you learn from the past. Look at these names. Try to put yourself in the place of their family. My kids and I were waiting families. We have waiting families now, waiting for their loved ones to come home. But again, come, learn from it, and just appreciate the freedoms that we have.
My name is Warren Harmon, and I'm the founder and charter member, the first charter member, of Vietnam Veterans of America, Chapter 1067. I founded the chapter in 2012, and it grew quickly in about a year and a half to be the largest chapter in the state of Alabama. And now, with over 550 members, we're the 10th largest chapter in the nation for Vietnam veterans.
Say that again,
for Vietnam veterans.
For Vietnam veterans. Yeah. I moved the microphone too quickly. So your chapter was very instrumental in bringing the wall to Huntsville.
That's right. Our chapter is the host chapter. And then we got a whole bunch of supporting sponsors and that had the money, because it cost quite a bit to bring the wall. But that endeavor we started a little over a year ago. And actually, they choose where they go. And they had over 100 cities that applied, and they only took 36. And so we were lucky enough to be one of them. There's 58,319 names on the wall, and they do add some from time to time if they died of their injuries that they received in Vietnam.
You have seen the wall many times.
Yes, ma'am. I've been to Washington, D.C. I've seen the real wall. This one is about a three-quarter replica. It's 375 feet long.
Even seeing the wall or the replica so many times, What does it mean to you?
Well, I've got a lot of comrades that are on that wall. I did two tours in Vietnam. One was with the U.S. Marine Corps. I was there in 68 and 69, which 68 was the bloodiest year ever. And I was with the infantry in the Marines. And so I later come back to the States, and I entered the Army in 1970, and I spent over 19 years in the Army. They sent me back in 71, 72 to Vietnam to infantry, first the infantry division and then the infantry brigade. And so it means a lot to me when I see this wall and when I see these names. And grown men do still cry. I do get teared up.
Those were the voices of some of the visitors to The Wall That Heals, on display last weekend at John Hunt Park in Huntsville. Thanks to Community Newsroom producer Kathy Main for wielding the public microphone and allowing these folks to share their thoughts. This is the Public Radio Hour here on 89.3 WLRH Huntsville. I'm your host, Brett Tannehill. Thanks for tuning in. We're keeping the spotlight on our community's military veterans in our next segment as we head to the Huntsville International Airport.
The Huntsville International Airport and the transportation.
Where yesterday, an honor guard was awaiting the arrival of wounded service members who are being honored as part of Heroes Week, hosted each year by the Semper Fi Community Task Force. I sat down with Steve Mosian.
Our focus is not just current veterans of current wars, but it's the youth. Also, in Heroes Week as an event where we bring in veterans that are wounded, we also try to mix in a Vietnam veteran or two into the mix, because it's really good for someone who is having an issue to understand that it's the same stuff, just a different war. You know, others have gone through it and others have found their way through the fog.
We've done some coverage of the wall that heals that was in town last weekend, and that's an issue that came up time and time again, being able to connect veterans who have a shared experience, how helpful that is.
Yes, and it's very helpful if you're doing it within the same generation, but what we have found is it's actually very helpful if you're doing it cross-generationally. You have Vietnam veterans with Iraq War veterans. And they find out that, oh, look, 20 years, 30 years, 50 years ago, people went through the same things. So it's not, the individual suffering does not think that they are unique and going through this problem by themselves, that others have it and others go through it.
And you say it's especially helpful to have that cross-generational connection there. Why do you think it is helpful to have the different age groups talk about this? You kind of touched on that.
Well, I'm a Vietnam veteran, and you know, when I came back, I put things in the proverbial little shoebox and stuck them away in the back of my brain and never opened that box up. Years and years and years later, I opened that box up, and I had a problem. I had a little issue, and I sought help talking to those that had gone through the same kinds of things I went through. And what we have found is that if I talk to a Korean War veteran or a World War II veteran, not too many of them left anymore, but I have spoken with them, I find out that they had the same problems. They had the same feelings. And the fact that they managed to work their way through them showed me a path to work my way through it. It was, if he can do it, I can do it, you know. I'm not alone. Others have it. And in fact, you know, what we call PTSD today, it was just called different things in different wars. It the same issues. People that came back from combat zones had the same issues. It was just called different things.
Do you feel comfortable sharing? You mentioned the shoebox. Do you feel comfortable sharing the issue that you discovered and had to work through?
Well, I had to work my way through a night that happened on top of a hill and during an attack and the death of some people that I had put into a certain position. And I felt tremendous guilt from that. At the time I was focused on the tree in front of me and not the forest, if that makes sense.
It does.
Afterwards, looking back on it, that's when I started to have a problem about it. And it was a guilt problem, you know, pure and simple. It was guilt. It was survivor's guilt in a way, but it was also guilt that I had put them in that position. And I had to talk to some folks about that, but, you know, I wasn't going to talk to someone who just read things in a book. I needed to talk to another veteran who had been in combat, because he's the only one who would really understand the kind of guilt that you feel.
Were you surprised to discover that it helped to talk to someone who had that shared experience? How did you come to the realization that that's what you needed to do?
Well, I believe, you know, veterans like to talk to veterans, okay? We really do. And we talk to each other differently than we talk to non-veterans, especially combat veterans talking to combat veterans. And I talked to some friends, and that's what they suggested, because it had worked for them. So I said, okay, and let's talk, you know. So it's sort of word of mouth referral to get the help, and it works. It works.
One of the interesting things about Heroes Week that I'm sure our listeners think is especially important is the educational component of having people go into local schools. And I know that some of the veterans and service members you're working with are also going to various luncheons with civic groups. Talk a little bit about the component of incorporating local schools into it.
Well, most of the local schools in the area. Now, North Alabama is a very patriotic community. We have, I don't know how many tens of thousands of retired military that live in this area. And that filters its way into the education system when you are the son or daughter or grandson or granddaughter of a military person. They have something that the others don't. They have some inkling of service to the country. What we thought was that since the schools in the area do Veterans Day assemblies, we asked them if they'd like to have one of our guests come and speak. Now, some of our guests that come to Heroes Week, their wounds are obvious. They are missing legs, they are missing arms, they're in wheelchairs. But you know, PTSD is not a visible wound. So some of them, you may see them walking along and they look just fine, but they're not, okay? And we believe, just as I said earlier, that the cross-generational talk between veterans is good. We also believe that the young people need to understand what the risk of military service is, not to scare them, but so that they learn to respect and revere those who go to take care and protect them. So we ended up with schools. I think we're doing 5 schools this year that we will take some of our guests to, and they get to speak to the kids at the schools. And the schools love it. They want us to come back each year.
Do you find that the kids, the younger folks, have any sort of common question or response to hearing the experiences of a veteran? What sort of things are they interested in knowing?
Well, you know, some of them ask general questions like, you know, well, how did you feel at this certain time? And that can be difficult for some veterans to answer, because it sort of delves into the ultra personal. So sometimes they sort of wordsmith their way around that one. Some ask about, particularly in the younger students, you know, will ask questions about blood and guts and that sort of thing. And we try to stay away from that stuff. It's more about teaching them about patriotism, sacrifice, courage, commitment. We want them to know that this is the way the military thinks. This is the way they need to think. Not that they all need to go in the military, and not that they're all going to be injured, but they need to understand that people sacrifice a lot for them. And in the end, that's what comes through in the end. Even if they ask the veteran in the wheelchair absolutely no questions about how he was injured, they saw him. And, you know, a picture's worth 1,000 words. So that picture in the brain of that fellow sitting there in a wheelchair with no legs, but who can come in and sit and joke with you, and talk to you about things. That's an indelible image in the brain. And that's what we hope they take away, that, you can be injured, and that really doesn't destroy you. That may make you have to make other accommodations for things, but it doesn't destroy you as a human being.
Over the past several months, we've been exploring a number of issues related to mental health awareness throughout our community, and you've touched on some of those during our conversation here. Could you speak a little bit to the unique challenges that veterans face as they come back and try to reintegrate into civilian life?
Well, I can't speak much about the treatment for it, but it is difficult when you are working in a combat zone. The intensity is greater than anything you'll experience in this country. You trust the person next to you with your life, and you get in that mode that you're all in it together, and you trust, you fight for him and he fights for you. And sometimes when you come back into the civilian world, you find out, oh, it's not like that. And that can be very difficult to adjust to. It can be very difficult to find out that this fellow that you think was your friend down the hall is really gunning for your job, okay? And he doesn't care what it does to you.
It's a competitive environment versus camaraderie.
That's a great way to put it. Great way to put it. In the military, it's team. And you know, when I said you fight for the guy next to you, and he fights for you. It's not like that when you come back and go into the civilian world. So that's one aspect where it's different. It's also different because sometimes you can't talk to people about what it is you experienced. You don't want to talk to people about it. It can become very private, and it can become very debilitating if you keep it all inside. So there are, if you work at a facility and nobody's ever been in combat, you can't talk to them about it because they won't understand.
And this is a very special weekend in military history as we remember the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I this Sunday, November 11th. Steve, why is it important to remember moments in history like this? We had the Wall That Heals in town last weekend, and this weekend another big moment. Why is it important to remember?
Well, the saying is that those who don't remember history are doomed to repeat it. And if you know the history of World War I, in fact, it was virtually repeated in World War II. And while the Korean War wasn't a repeat of that, it was the same type ideologies that fostered that one, and the same type of ideologies that fostered Vietnam, and the same type of ideologies that fostered what's going on in the Middle East. So it's important to understand historically, what causes war and what type ideologies you need to be aware of and watching before the war starts. November 11th is a sacred day for veterans. It's the day that every one of us, we're brothers and sisters, even if we don't know each other. And we are most grateful to the nation for honoring us on that day.
That was Steve Mosian with the Semper Fi Community Task Force, hosting Heroes Week, now underway, a series of special events and activities aimed at recognizing wounded or injured service members and their caregivers. As you hopefully heard, this Sunday is a special Veterans Day, as we hope you'll take a few moments to reflect on the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I.
Huntsville's Veterans Day Parade is scheduled for Monday in downtown Huntsville. It begins with a cannon shot at precisely 11:11 in a nod to the date of the World War I anniversary. This is the Public Radio Hour on member-supported 89.3 WLRH Huntsville. Still to come, you'll hear about an upcoming visit from a master of meditation and explore the power of music with a special show from the Huntsville Chamber Music Guild. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hi, it's Kyle Rizdahl, the host of Marketplace. My very first car was a 1971 Cutlass 442 convertible. It was red, it went about 1,000 miles an hour in a straight line, and got something like 5 miles to the gallon. Man, I loved that car. Even that old 442, which really I never should have sold, it can be turned into more of your favorite programs. Here's how to do that.
Call 855-277-2346 or visit WLRH.org.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, renowned historian Doris Kearns Goodwin talks about four U.S. presidents who rose to the challenge of leading America during turbulent times. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
Catch City Arts and Lectures here Thursday nights at 8 on 89.3 HD1 WLRH. Member-supported public radio for Huntsville and the Tennessee Valley.
This is the Public Radio Hour on member-supported 89.3 WLRH Huntsville. And tonight's show is exploring the power of mind and spirit. Next Thursday, prominent Indian Buddhist monk, the Venerable Bhikkhu Sanghasanan, will deliver a lecture at Powell Auditorium at Oakwood University. Noor Galani with the Interfaith Mission Service, which is helping host the event, stopped by to tell us more about this special visitor to Huntsville.
Among other things, the monks, personally for their own life, they do meditation and spiritual practice like that. But they're also big into serving the community. This particular place I'm going to talk about is, their motto is compassion in action. So those are the kinds of things that they're involved in, service and spiritual practice.
And as you were saying, Venerable Sanghasana's name has that literal meaning to it.
Yes. It's Sangha is community and Sena is service.
So what can people expect at this event? What can they expect to hear? What's the topic of discussion?
Well, he is going to talk about the Mahabodhi International Meditation Center, which is the name of the meditation center he created about 30 years ago. It started out from a plot of plain sand, you know, up in the cold desert of the Himalayas. And he has created out of it a campus of about 250 acres that is just beautiful, and it is doing outstanding service. It is a meditation and yoga center, internationally well known. It is also training monks and nuns, Buddhist monks and nuns. In addition to that, it is quite a humanitarian center. It has schools, residential schools for poor children from up in the mountains in small villages where they would never go to school normally. So he provides residential school at no charge for them, about 1,000 students altogether. There is a hospital, there is an old people's home, there is a school for the blind. So all these kinds of things that are of a humanitarian nature. Then in addition, he also has cultural activities trying to preserve Ladakh. Ladakh is the name of the province in India, the northernmost province of India where this is. So they try and preserve the Ladakhi culture. He has created wonderful agricultural and horticultural activities, very environmentally sensitive. In this desert, so it's a remarkable activity, you know, achievement he has managed over there.
And this event is being hosted in part by the Interfaith Mission Service and Oakwood University. How did this event come to be? Why bring Venerable Sanghasana to Huntsville?
Okay. Well, he actually came to Canada currently this week. He is involved in the Parliament of World Religions, which is the largest gathering of religions in the world, about 10,000 people. And after the parliament, he's going to go to San Jose for a couple of days and then come to Huntsville. And he's coming to Huntsville mainly because I spent 4 months last there as a volunteer and got to know them very well. And then since he was coming to the parliament, I invited him to come here also. So it's quite an opportunity for Huntsville, I think.
Will he be doing anything else while in Huntsville, visiting the Rocket Center? What other sort of things are planned?
Yes, certainly I will take him around, show him the town and the Rocket Center and all of that. We have also another program the day before on Wednesday, the 14th. He's going to be speaking to the medical community in town. He's going to talk about meditation in medical practice. So that should be a very interesting thing.
What's the value of having an event like this here in Huntsville? Obviously, a very special person to have as a guest. What is the value of bringing it here to the to this community?
Well, first of all, the Buddhist population in Huntsville is very low. So Huntsville people don't get much chance to interact with Buddhist people. So this is quite a good opportunity to meet somebody who is very active. He is also one of the top 25 faith leaders in India and has had major conferences at his place. And so, in fact, I first time went to one of those and just fell in love with this place and then went back the following year to serve. And because of that, the Interfaith Mission Service was very interested in hosting him here. And Oakwood University is also very much involved in religion studies. So, Therefore, they both joined together to sponsor the program. And his tremendous humanitarian services are also going to be very appealing, I think, to the people here.
And you mentioned you volunteered at the center for a time. Personally, what did you get from that experience?
Well, I spent the summer last year in 2017 there for about 4 months. I was volunteering in their humanitarian services programs. And so first of all, for me personally, just to be in that place was an incredible experience. I also got the opportunity to learn and do yoga and meditation, which I have been practicing for many years, but this was quite an experience. But in addition, I got the opportunity to really get to know all their different programs. And so I'm now continuing to help them in some of these. I help them in writing proposals for funding because they depend on donations and some government grants. So they don't have very good people to write proposals and things like that. So I'm helping him in that. But in addition, I've gotten involved in trying to solarize, solar energy for that campus and for remote areas in the province of Ladakh, which is a fairly poor province and very large, the second largest province in India, but very sparsely populated. So solar energy will be a tremendous addition to them because they have some coal-fired energy, but it's very spotty and not reliable and everything. And up there, it's very, very cold in the winter, so energy is an important...
So how have efforts been going to solarize that part of the country?
Okay, so we are just initiating the program. I have identified another organization in Rajasthan, in India, further south, which is also a spiritual organization. And they have solarized their whole campus, and they have experience doing that. And they've got people who know it practically. So,
well, that's great to have an example to look to.
Yes, and they're going to participate with us and help us in the solarizing project. I also have hopes of creating a telemedicine program because, again, they're not experts around as much in very remote areas. They never see a doctor. So telemedicine will be a tremendous addition to that also.
And back to Venerable Sanghasana's visit, what do you hope people get from coming to hear him talk? What do you hope they get from that?
Well, I think for the medical community, since it's going to focus on meditation in medical practice.
On the 14th.
On the 14th. I think that that will be of quite a bit of interest and value to that community. And there is a lot of interest already buzzing around in that community. So that's one part of it. But I think just hearing somebody who is a master of teaching meditation will be an experience for most of us here. He is also quite prominent in interfaith activities in India. When I first time went there, he invited me to a conference of interfaith people. And about 25 top faith leaders in India got together to start a new program of global activities in improving sanitation and water supply in poor countries. In India, for example, 500 million people don't have access to a toilet. So it's a very, very important health issue. So he's involved in lots of all of these kinds of things. And I think just sharing his experience will be tremendous for us.
That was Noor Gilani with the Interfaith Mission Service talking about next Thursday's visit by prominent Buddhist monk, the Venerable Bhikkhu Sanghasanan from India. He'll speak at Powell Auditorium at Oakwood University at 7 p.m. Refreshments will follow, and the public is invited to attend. Venerable Sanghasanan will also speak to the Huntsville medical community this coming Wednesday at 5 p.m. about meditation and medical practice at the UAB Medical Center on Governor's Drive. In tonight's final segment of the Public Radio Hour, we hope to send your spirit soaring. The Huntsville Chamber Music Guild will host vocal group Voces 8 in concert this Saturday at 5:30 at Trinity United Methodist Church in Huntsville. Earlier today, during Morning Blend, Dory Nutt spoke with Guild members Ron Roberts and B.B. Pride about this special concert. Let's hear some music and then a portion of their conversation.
We've been listening to Underneath the Stars by Kate Rusby, performed here by Voces 8. And I have in the studio with me this morning Huntsville Chamber Music Guild board members Ron Roberts and B.B. Pride, here to talk about Voces 8. First off, B.B., let me apologize for using your other name, your professional name, in the promo that I did for this piece.
Absolutely.
I called you
B.B. Pride. That's no problem. A lot of people don't know me as B.B. Pride. Well, they only know me, classical music people know me as B.B. Black. Well, so that's fine.
I even know your wonderful husband, Harvey. I know your last name is Pride. But in my heart, you will forever be B.B. Black International Trumpet
Thank
virtuoso.
You. Well, now I'm B.B. Black Pride. So that's a little odd sounding, but that's who I am. So. But I'm happy to be here, Dory.
Oh, well, thank you for coming in. And Ron, glad that you can come as well.
Happy to be here.
Huntsville operatic star.
Oh, please.
Yes. Oh, I know. And isn't he wonderful?
Bon vivant. So we're glad to have you both here.
Don't stop.
To talk. Well, I was just going to say, but enough about us. Let's talk about Voces 8. That's why we're here. So, Ron, tell us a little about Voces 8.
Oh, my goodness. We're so excited to have them here. I've known about them for a long time via their internet and YouTube videos and their website. And they're a group of eight, as the name implies, eight vocalists, two women and six men. That's eight, right? I'm not good at math. Okay. They all have studied classical voice in college. I was reading some of their bios. One of them even debuted with this group the day after he graduated from college.
Gosh. So uh-huh. And a couple of them have sung with the Westminster Abbey.
They
choir.
Have Westminster Abbey, and there was there's another big cathedral choir they sang, and I can't remember which one. It'll come to me later, probably. But they are each just splendid singers in their own right, and I've read a lot of reviews and things about them, and many critics say they're all wonderful alone, but when they are together, something really special
happens.
And they're just really something else. So I would encourage folks to check them out on YouTube and look for VOCES and the number 8, Voces 8, mm-hmm. and you get a taste of what you can hear this Saturday. So again, we're really excited about this.
Well, BB, why don't you give us an idea of the type of music that they'll be singing on this concert?
Well, it's kind of a popular, I will say, kind of it's tunes that most of us will recognize, even if we're not just hardcore classical music fans.
Okay.
But some of the pieces, Sing Joyfully, that's more of a religious type piece. Mm-hmm. Straighten Up and Fly Right by Nat King Cole. Oh. We all know that. Homeward Bound by Simon and Garfunkel.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah, right. And then, of course, Danny Boy. We all love Danny Boy. The piece you just played was Underneath the Stars. They will also be performing that.
Good. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
The Luckiest by Ben Folds.
See, that's why I'm going to the concert. Most people would be surprised to find out that I am the world's biggest Ben Folds fan. So that was the piece that I saw in the concert, and I thought, this is why I'm going.
Yeah.
So a lot of really recognizable music done in this beautiful style that they have. Mm-hmm. But so let me ask you, if people are not in love with popular music, is there any reason, like if they are the diehard classical fans, what would they get out of coming to this concert?
Well, I think it's still going to be a classical feel to all these so-called pop pieces or mm-hmm. more recognizable pieces. But, I mean, this group has impeccable intonation. I mean, unbelievable intonation. And they are a cappella. Did we say that already?
We did not.
So they're not. I mean, they do concerts with orchestras and soloists and this, that, and the other. But this concert is an a cappella concert. Mm-hmm. So they have no accompaniment. So their intonation has to be flawless.
Right.
Okay. So, I mean, that in itself. And, you know, all genres are better if the musicians have a classical education. I mean, that just polishes it and makes mm-hmm. it, you know, brings it up to another level.
Mm-hmm.
So this concert truly is for everyone. Mm-hmm. And it's the first time we've ever had them here.
Oh.
So this is huge. This is really, really huge. Mm-hmm. It's not one to be missed. I'm terribly excited about this concert. Mm-hmm. So.
And they're doing several classical pieces.
Okay.
I mean, it's not all just pop, but you mm-hmm. think Pretorius, Mendelssohn, Rachmaninoff, and Elgar. You know the famous movement from what is it? Nimrod.
Oh, Nimrod.
Yeah. So that Lux Aeterna is Nimrod for vocalists.
Oh,
and
my.
That's on YouTube also.
That
and
is it's one of the most beautiful pieces.
Yes.
No, that's what, you know, when you're talking about impeccable intonation, the hair on the back of my neck starts to stand up. And then you talk about that variation from Elgar and thinking of that sung by this a cappella group.
Yeah.
It's going to be fabulous. And anybody who's been to a concert at Trinity Methodist
mm-hmm.
for the Huntsville Chamber Music Guild or any other organization that performs there knows that the acoustics for something like this are just superb.
They are. They really are.
Mm-hmm. Our artists are always raving about the acoustics.
Mm-hmm. One story we tell over and over is that years ago, the the string quartet, Emerson String Quartet, came, and one of our members, David Brown, was backstage, you know, holding the door for them and ushering them in and out. And they came off stage at some point between pieces and said, you know, the sound in here reminds me of the Concertgebouw in Amsterdam.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So we tell that story. He may have been drunk when he said that. I don't know. I mean, the musician. But he did say that. So it really is a fabulous sound in that room. And vocalists especially seem to really like it a lot. Mm-hmm. So
we're going to love the sound. We're going to love the look. I looked at a lot of their videos on YouTube getting ready for this interview, and just because when I knew they were coming to town, and they're all attractive young people. So.
Yes, we hate them. And they can sing.
And they can sing. Yeah. So, yes, but it will be a wonderful event all around. Well, let's listen to just a little more music by Voces 8.
You've been listening to music from Voces 8 in concert Saturday night at 5:30 at Trinity United Methodist Church. Tickets are required. You also heard Huntsville Chamber Music Guild members B.B. Pride and Ron Roberts as they spoke with Dory Nutt earlier today about the concert during Morning Blend here on 89.3 Huntsville. We hope you enjoyed tonight's show. Thanks to Community Newsroom producer Kathy Main for taking the public microphone to the Wall That Heals last weekend. Also, thanks to Steve Mosian and the Semper Fi Community Task Force for speaking with us, and to Noor Galani with Interfaith Mission Service for sharing information about Buddhist monk the Venerable Bhikkhu Sanghasanan, speaking Thursday night at 7 at Oakwood University. You can find a podcast of tonight's show at WLRH.org. Just look under Programs for the Public Radio Hour. Thanks for listening. Do something good every day, and we'll see you next week.